Tone Audio. Check it out. Organic Climbing is the official sponsor of Sends and Suffers podcast, and if you didn't know, now you know. I have been using this company's products since before my podcast, since I basically started rock climbing. They're cool, they're rad, they're customizable. You can get bouldering pads, chalk buckets, backpacks, they've got shoes, they've got almost anything you can conceive to make you look fly, to make you functional at the crag. Check out Organic Climbing, put in Sends and Suffers at your purchase. It helps this podcast out and really support someone who has been supporting the conception of climbing communities since the beginning. Josh and everyone at Organic is all about making sure communities grow. And that is a huge thing coming from a small company that moves massive, massive mountains. So check out Organic Climbing. Tell them I sent you. Let's get into this episode. Friends and enemies, lovers and haters, welcome to Sends and Suffers podcast. I am your host, Mario Stanley. If you haven't already, please follow, like, and subscribe to Sends and Suffers podcast. Every bit counts, and we would love to hear from you. So take a moment to leave a comment. These go a long way and help others know what they're getting into and how good this show is. If this is one of your favorite podcasts, consider becoming a Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you are investing in Sends and Suffers podcast, and it's like buying your boy a taco, hanging out, and getting to know the good that is coming your way. Monthly recaps, early show releases, and all the other cool things that we do. Thank you so much for listening to Sends and Suffers podcasts. All right, so before we get into who our guest is today, I want to let you guys know that we have some drip that has dropped. The new Sends and Suffers t-shirt is out. If you're looking at your pocket supercomputer, you probably notice a new logo. That fresh, rustic look from a local Texas artist known as Hank, the legend. That cowboy hat, those thorny cactus thymes. Well, that just looks like we're just digging into the root of the matter, because that's what we do here on Sends and Suffers. But you can get yourself one for $30. $5 for shipping and handling. Just shoot me a message at sendsandsuffers@gmail.com or just message me on social. I'll give you the information and we'll get one right out to you anyway. Patreon members, however, you guys are getting one. So if you have been a paid Patreon member for quite a while, and there's a few of you, I need to know your sizes because I've got a gift for you. Today, my guest is Katie Jo Meyer. Do you remember when you started looking for climbers or actually trying to find climbers on social media? For me, now this is before TikTok was really a thing. TikTok actually wasn't even around. Who am I kidding? Anyway, I started following Katie a long time ago because I really just attached to the stories, the images, and the things she was talking about her life in retrospect to climbing, how those two intertwine. Well, today we get to talk about all those points of intersection and what she's been doing, what she is doing, and where she is going. Enjoy my episode today with Katie Jo Meyer. Boom. Katie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome to Sons and Suffers.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I'm not going to assume that the audience knows who you are. Yeah. I know who you are because, as we talked earlier, I've been following you since, I guess, 2017?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you took your road trip.
Yep.
But who are you, where are you from, and how did you get connected to climbing or whatever adventurous sports you like to do outdoors?
Okay. My name is Katie Jo. I'm based out of California. I've been climbing now about, 12, 13 years, and I love it. It's kind of everything to me. I started climbing when I was 28, and at that time I was working a full-time job in finance and living in the city, and I'd really been struggling with mental health. Mental health is a huge part of my story, ever since I was a child. And so at that time, things were just really, really hard. And I remember like being in the car, like I live in LA, so you spend an awful lot of time in your car sitting in traffic. And I would just sit there for like hours on end thinking really, really dark thoughts and like imagining like driving my car off a cliff or like just, yeah, it just like wasn't, I was in a really bad spot. And I feel really lucky. I kind of had like the wherewithal to be like, you know, this is not good. This is not healthy. I need to do something. And so I just kind of started Googling things that would like keep me occupied, keep me out of traffic, because that seemed to be where my like head would just start spinning.
Makes sense.
And I found there was a climbing gym like right down the street from my work. So I was like, well, that sounds kind of fun. And I had a background in gymnastics, and it just sort of felt like that would be an extension of a sport that I had already loved.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I went in for a beginner's class, and I was just like instantly hooked. And life kind of took on this whole new direction ever since.
And so you basically started rock climbing after that. And then can you, I mean, can we talk a little bit about your gymnastic background? How long did you do that for?
I think my parents put me in gymnastics when I was about 5 or 6.
Okay.
At first, I didn't like it. Like, the structure was too much for me, and I quit, but my older sister stayed with it. And at some point, she made, like, a competitive team, and I, like, got kind of jealous. And I remember being like, you know, she's my older sister. I want to follow in her footsteps. So at home, I started just like teaching myself to do gymnastics. And I think once I ended up like backflipping off the couch, my parents were like, okay, like you're going back in. And so maybe around 10 years old, I started taking gymnastics pretty seriously. I started competing. And I competed all the way up through college. I went to Mizzou, University of Missouri. And yeah, it was a great sport. Definitely a great background for getting into climbing.
Yeah, I was curious about that because, I mean, you know, I think you're a crusher. I've watched your climbing for a long time. And you seem to really enjoy it. And that's the most important part. And I find that I think people who kind of gravitate towards it pretty quickly and jump into it, they have some kind of a background. Mine's track and field.
Okay.
You know, we have some kind of an athletic background as an athlete. So that answers that question and kind of like paints a little bigger picture and some context for that.
Well, if you see like some of how I climb too, my style is like to use my legs as much as possible and like heel hook as high over my head as I can and do like full splits all the time. And that's definitely from that gymnastics background.
That makes a lot of sense.
You kind of get tortured to be flexible in gymnastics. So
yeah, I've watched some stuff on Instagram where I'm like watching these people do like, you know, sitting on the ground, like with like 3 or 2 yoga blocks. And then they're like, have a pipe behind them. They're like balancing and it's like, but keeping their core tension. I'm like, this is like complicated. Yeah. I mean, it looks kind of geisha, but
it's a little painful, but I remember like being in gymnastics and like you'd put your feet, like up on mats and then your coaches would come like push your hips down and you definitely work for that flexibility. But it's funny now because I get a lot of comments, like if I post a ridiculous photo of like doing the splits on a climb, people will write to me and just be like, flexibility is aid. And I'm like, I worked
that's
really hard
stupidest
for that.
Answer, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Flexibility is aids and so is muscles in general.
I mean, everything in climbing is kind of aid, right? Yeah. Like everything we use, but I'm just like, I'll take it. I worked really hard. I was in a lot of pain for that aid.
Yeah. And so we talked about briefly, kind of switching gears. We talked briefly about your transition into climbing because I started following you around 2017.
Okay.
It seemed like all of a sudden you just exploded on the scene and you had a ton of climbing going on. You were posting a lot and I just remember seeing you in Joshua Tree, a lot of places along the West Coast. And we had briefly talked before, you decided to take a road trip to Alaska.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about this? Like why, okay, well, one, why Alaska?
Okay. That seems very far away from where were you located prior?
Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. It's almost at the bottom.
Yeah. It's big.
And then why a road trip all the way up to Alaska? And like, what was the best and the worst parts of it?
Okay. Can I actually like take it back just a little further?
Absolutely.
Before
it's
Alaska?
It's your podcast as much as mine.
Okay, cool. I just didn't want to get too out of order or anything. But yeah, so basically, like I mentioned before, I had started climbing when I was 28. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you know, like I'm working a full-time job, very like much an adult, normal 9-to-5 life. But from the time I started climbing, I think I knew in the back of my head, like, this is what I want to do. I definitely want to be more invested in this sport and kind of make it my lifestyle. But that's not something that can happen really easily.
No, I agree.
And so it took like 7 years where I was still working a full-time job, training, climbing, doing kind of local comps, going to all my local crags. And I also started like working at the climbing gym. I was belaying, I was coaching, I was route setting, just like anything I could do to get my hands like in the sport. And also at the same time is when I started picking up a camera. So for me, like climbing and like taking photos, just they always went hand in hand.
Okay.
So for 7 years, that was my life. It was just like chaos. And then I actually had a really big loss of one of my mentors at the end of 2017.
Okay.
And it was just really, really devastating. And it kind of hit me like, life is really short.
Yeah.
And you don't know when it could all be over. Like it could happen like that. And so when that happened, I kind of made the decision right then and there, like I'm now 35 and I have this dream in my mind to like be a climber. There's, you know, like,
yeah,
there's not that much time left. Like
yeah,
I better
no.
do something about it. So right after that happened, I went to my full-time job and I told them that I was going to quit the next year at the beginning of the year. And at that point I had a little bit of savings and I didn't know exactly what to do, but I felt like Europe is this big hub for climbing. Like I'm just going to go there.
Okay.
So I bought a one-way ticket. I had just a carry-on and I just like flew to Europe and I stayed for a few months and my whole trip, like it wasn't planned. It was just based on like climbers that I met inviting me to like, oh, like come climb with us here or like come stay with me here. And that to me was like the first time I got to experience like the greater climbing community. And it was
awesome.
Just so welcoming and so like people just took me in.
What was your fondest memory of that time? Like in being in Europe for that time?
That's really
hard. Or is
hard.
There any one, I'm sure a lot of people stand out, but I guess is there like a moment or a group of people or a place that you were that kind of stood out the most to you?
Honestly, I think I don't know, maybe this is just like the gimme answer, but it was really just everything. Like I was on my own and yet I was never alone.
Mm.
And before the trip, so many people like back in LA had been like, you are crazy. You're like a single female going to travel completely alone in foreign countries. Like something bad is going to happen to you. And the complete opposite happened. Like I was just taking care of every step of the way. Like climbers were helping me, giving me places to stay, giving me rides, you know, climbing with me. I think I went to like 8 different countries on that trip just with basically complete strangers. And that it like really just blew me away to see like how close-knit this huge community can be. And like how we really can step up and care for each other. So I think
it's awesome.
Just overall, I don't know.
And then you were there for 3 months, you said, right?
About 4. Yeah.
About 4. Okay.
Yeah.
And then how did you know it was time to come home?
I actually did get really homesick.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was living out of like one backpack. And
okay. I can see that.
At one point, this is awful. Like I had brought only 2 pairs of shoes. And my approach shoes started smelling so bad that like literally people would not want to sit next to me. And I was like, okay, I think it's time to go home.
That's fair.
But I did get really homesick. It was a long trip, you know, just on the road. And eventually, I think the places I loved back home, my friends, my family, that just really started calling to me. And it just felt like the right time.
It was time to come home.
Yeah.
Cool. It wasn't the shoes. It was.
That was part of it.
Okay.
I literally was sitting on a rock. I went to Magic Wood with some friends and we were like eating lunch on a rock and my shoes were sitting there and I noticed my friend just scooting over bit by bit. And I was like, what's wrong? Like, where are you going? And he was like so embarrassed to tell me.
But that's funny.
I was like, I get it. They've been worn for 4 months straight. Like, it's fine.
It's fair. That's why I wear Chacos religiously.
Yeah.
Fair
good
enough.
Pro tip for next time.
I guess outside of all of that, was there any like travel hack, little beta hack that you learned that like something that you like, you didn't start out this way, but you definitely ended this way that you learned during that trip that made your adventures that you took later on a little easier? And I imagine during that time you had to learn a couple tips and tricks.
That's
I'm just hard. A nerd. Yeah, I like to know if there's like little things that stand out.
I think the biggest thing was just sort of being like open to experiences and also like having a lot of faith in yourself, because there were times when like, I don't know, for example, I went to Greece at one point and, you know, it was in a small town. People didn't speak English and I needed to find medicine.
Oh, wow.
And I like went to a grocery store because in the U.S. you can often get, you know, medicine at a grocery store. Mm-hmm. But there you do have to go to a pharmacy. And so I was trying to communicate with the cashier and like we had no idea what we were saying to each other. And eventually I just start like miming things. And then she starts laughing and is like, I get it. And eventually like points me in the right direction of the pharmacy. I get the medicine I need. And just little things like that. It was like taught me that like, yeah, it can be really hard, but you can get through it.
Okay.
And people in general are very kind and they do want to help you. And then like another experience, a bunch of my travel plans got kind of messed up and I ended up in Prague in like the middle of the night, couldn't find a place to stay. And eventually just like grabbed my bag and fell asleep on a park bench. And I was like, woke up in the morning to the sunrise, like over all the spires. And you think that something like that is just like negative, but it was like, actually, you know what? It's fine. Like sometimes you just do random things and you get through it and you can make it. And so I just feel like weird things like that just gave me a little bit more belief in my ability to like get through hard times and like know that I can survive. Like if things
that's
go
cool.
Up, like.
So did that lay, I guess that had to motivate you or kind of lay the foundation for your next bigger trip that you took.
Yeah, okay. I think so. It just gave me a little bit more confidence that like, yeah, everything is not going to go to plan. Things will definitely get messed up and it's going to be fine.
I think that's climbing in itself, though.
Yeah.
Like if you expect climbing to go exactly to plan or exactly as ordered, I think you're going to be set for a catastrophe.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, you just accept, like, I don't know. For me, every climbing trip I go on, I totally expect the whole trip to go awry every time. So I'm not surprised when it does. Or when it doesn't, I'm like, oh, okay.
Hey, like, that one actually went good.
Yeah, it was great. Optimistically, that's funny. And so you came home. Where did your journey with like after being there, like, did you go back to work? Did you just see family or was it just more like, all right, I'm just continuing on this climbing journey?
Yeah. When I got home, I didn't really know what I was going to do, but during that trip, I think just how it had all unfolded and the fact that I was like shooting a lot of photos there and just doing this whole journey as like a woman on my own, that it got some interest. And so I was able to get a few like photography clients and work with a few brands. And so that kind of, when I got home, it started me on this new career path like with photography and like film and shooting. So I kind of was diving into that and also just really keeping going with climbing as much as possible, still traveling. And then that's when I did the trip to Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which, and this trip to Alaska, did you do it by yourself once again, or was it more like
that planning? One I did with my partner at the time.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
Then why Alaska? Like, how did you guys come up with that? I mean, that's pretty far.
Yeah. I had actually been to Alaska before, and it was just one of those places that I instantly had like fallen in love with and really wanted to go back to. So now that I was sort of on that travel climbing kick, I was like, well, this feels like a good time. Like, okay. Let's just go.
Okay.
And it also, if you're thinking about going from California all the way up there, there's so much climbing along the way.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a great way to just like see new areas to climb in as well. Yeah.
Okay. It makes sense. The whole Western coast all the way up in, up to Squamish. I don't know much past Squamish. Was there much climbing in there? Or was it like more?
So the trip was supposed to kind of start in the summer and only last maybe like 2 or 3 months. But actually, like 2 days before I was originally supposed to leave, someone T-boned my car at an intersection. And I remember like I got hit. And I could hear all these people outside like shouting like, oh my gosh, call an ambulance, call an ambulance. And the only thing I could think about was my car. So I was like, I am supposed to leave in 2 days.
Oh,
and I like get out of the driver's side, like run around to the passenger side where it was hit. And I just like hit my knees and was like, no, because it was completely smashed in.
Yeah.
And like can opener like through the side of it. Oh, it was so devastating. So that kind of pushed.
Man.
I ended up having to get a new car. It was totaled. And that pushed back leaving for a while.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And then so ended up like leaving a bit late. And then every climbing spot I got to, the original plan was like, oh, I'll stay here like 4 days. And every single place ended up being like, now I'm staying for 2 weeks. Like, it's too good. I can't leave.
Oh, yeah.
So by the time I actually got past Squamish, it was fully winter.
Oh, wow.
And I hit Alaska in December, like literally crossed the border into a blizzard so bad that I just like we had to pull over and sleep in a rest stop.
So how long had you been climbing once that trip had started?
At that point, it would have been probably like 7.5 years.
Do you feel like that was the largest time of growth for you personally in your climbing during that trip? Because I find, I know for me, like the longest trips I've taken, I do feel like it's a huge explosion of growth. And it's not always that I'm like stronger during the trip, but I'm like, I'm smarter. I learn how to climb more. I learn how to navigate more.
Yeah.
And so like, I guess like what kind of gains did you see in your climbing during that time? And then probably more importantly, like what kind of gains did you grow personally for yourself? Like, you know, what did that do for, your mental health, your confidence, your abilities, your belief in your abilities and your faith in you?
Yeah. I definitely saw a huge growth in my climbing during that time. I think it was a period where I was climbing just very consistently. Like the whole trip, like I said, we would stop for like 2 weeks. We did like City of Rocks and then Leavenworth and then up to Squamish, and just being posted up in those areas and being able to like really dedicate time to like outdoor climbing. I did see a big growth. On that trip was, I believe that was the first time I started sending like double digit boulders.
Oh, nice.
And I ended up like getting a bunch of them. Like once I got one, I think it just that belief like that I could do it was what was missing.
Okay.
Before. To me, that had always been just like threshold that I didn't know if I could climb at that level. And then I remember like I've always been a very like vertical tech crimpy kind of climber.
Makes sense.
But on that trip, my first V10 ended up being, it's called like Schist Cave, and it's this super steep cave route. Mm-hmm. And I think doing that like really like opened my mind up to the fact that like, oh, like I am maybe stronger than I give myself credit for. Like I'm a little bit more capable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big growth mentally. I don't know if physically I was any stronger. It was just that like I started to believe in myself more.
No, I mean, I think that's a huge factor. I think people underestimate, like, earlier today, Pete and Juliet and I were talking about that, actually, exact same thing. It's like, I think, like, this is going to sound crazy to say out loud, and I'm sure some people will agree with me, but every coach knows that I'm right when I say this. If you believe in yourself that you can do the move, it is literally like gaining 20%. You get immediately 20% stronger. Like
yeah.
You feel, are you actually stronger? No. But because you believe and because you have faith and because you're also willing to try, you might as well have grown like 20 to 30% stronger in your actual abilities to try.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is like it allows you to try relentlessly and really just kind of go for things that you wouldn't go for normally. Mm-hmm. And get on routes that you wouldn't get on normally.
Yeah, I agree. Like the belief is important. And then I think something else that changed for me there is like, I've definitely had issues where I've been afraid of like failing or afraid of looking stupid if yeah. people are watching or like thinking to myself, I should be able to do that. And then I don't. And just
should
getting really,
is the worst thing ever.
I know, it's
should
terrible.
Never should on yourself.
I know. And that I think on that trip, that is something that I really started to like understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because there would be climbs of like a much lower grade that I couldn't do. And then I was sending like my first like V10s. And you start to realize like it's not, if you can't do something, it's because you can't do it at that moment. Like there's something you're lacking. Like
yeah,
maybe you don't
agreed.
Have that particular skill yet or that particular strength set. And so learning not to tell myself like, oh, I should, was really big. And just believing like I am capable. I can do these different styles that I didn't necessarily believe I could do before. That was all really big growth and learning on
nice.
That trip.
And well, I want to agree with that so much because I think that's like, coaching athletes for years, adults, privately and through programs, group programs and kids. Like if I just can get you to believe, even if I can get you halfway believe, like, you know, and I even tell kids, I'm like, just lie to yourself, like lie to yourself and tell you you can do it. And you'd be surprised how often
yeah.
it works. And people are like, oh my God, like kids are like, I need to start lying all the time. I'm like, no,
that's
not
what I meant.
Not what I meant. But like you're on the right track, just wrong road.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge, huge, huge thing. So like, how did these journeys and these trips, and I still want to hear more about the rest of the road to Alaska, but how did all this help play into your mental health and the struggles that you were kind of working through, was it easy because of these experiences or because you were doing this, was it easier, for the lack of a better word, was it easier to quiet the demons or was it more like you realized that they just weren't as big as they really were?
I think it might have been a quieting of sort because I feel like where a lot of my struggles came from is just like being really down on myself, like having very poor self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
just a lack of self-confidence. And like I had explained, like when I first moved to LA, when I was really struggling, I was just all alone, And I think these trips and climbing in itself giving me a community and just people to like lift me up and laugh with and just like be with, that's huge.
Yeah,
that's,
no, I agree 100%.
That's just so important. And in that community, you also start to feel more confident in yourself because you have these people who are telling you, like, you can do it, like, you've got this. And those words that are spoken to you are really powerful.
Agreed.
And I don't think that was something that I had really had.
Mm. Not growing up even in your gymnastics community?
Gymnastics, yes. So, like, gymnastics was great for me. I think a lot of my struggles came more from, like, my family life. I grew up with a lot of, like, in an environment with a lot of alcoholism and addiction, and it was really hard.
Okay.
So that support system wasn't so much there for me. Okay. Other than, I will say, like, my mom was an amazing support system, but we're going to have to touch on that in a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine.
But yeah. So I think there was just I just was, like, quite lonely in a lot of my life at that point, because I was out of gymnastics for years. You know, mm-hmm. I graduated college when I was 21. I didn't start climbing till I was 28. So for that time period, I really was just, like, working, kind of just, like, not really sure what I was doing with my life. I didn't have that outlet of gymnastics anymore. And I think that was a huge thing that was lacking.
You know, you kind of hit on a nugget where I feel like this is a big thing for athletes, especially, you know, if you don't go pro, for the lack of a better term, and whatever going pro means for you in your sport and your industry. I feel like when athletes get out of that, that's why you see athletes just, like, sometimes crumble or they, like, fall down into this, like, I don't want to say a pit, for lack of a better term, but, like, I feel like I've watched some of my best athletes that I've grown up with as teen kids and athletes that I grew up with in sports. You just kind of fall apart because you don't find something else to continually feed. Because when you're an athlete growing up, like, that dopamine, that adrenaline rush, like you kind of survive off of it. And when you don't do it, you either fill it with, like, I mean, you know, the classic food, drugs, alcohol, or social, or being a social butterfly, or maybe over obsessive working and, like, just becoming a workaholic. And so like, you have to, like, feed that, but all of those things are futile, I guess, for the lack of a better word, because it just doesn't
do the same thing.
No, it doesn't do it. It's just, it's not, it's like the exaltation of one's body is the ultimate release and ultimate freedom that one can have. And I think that's something that's, like, extremely important. And I think I'm very happy for you that you found climbing when you did, because I know what it's like to not have that. Yeah. Like, I went through a big lull of not having track and field. And when I found climbing, I was like, this is, all right, this is it. Like, this is the vibe right away.
It filled, like, such a gap in my life, I think. And, you know, like, you go from practicing, like, 4 or 5 hours a day to just, now I graduated and I aged out. Like, what do I do?
Yeah,
and
nothing.
Looking back on gymnastics, like, the things that I remember are just, they're so, like, tactile. Like, I just remember, like, standing on a balance beam, like, feeling it beneath my feet, or, like, the feeling of, like, chalking up, like, the bars in my hands, and, like, the feeling of being in the air. And you can't really capture that in anything else, like, that feeling of being in your body. And then you start climbing, and it was like, this is what I've been missing. Like, there it is. And I don't know.
I know that feeling very much so. It's definitely been probably, it's funny. It's just like, I mean, you've been climbing, I think we've been climbing roughly around, we have about an equal amount of experience climbing here, but I definitely can think about, like, when climbing's not the center, I don't want to say the center, but I'm not doing it for that purposes, that purposes of health, physical health, mental health, and sometimes emotional health too as well. I definitely know what it's like to sit at a low. It just, like, pops in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we went to Alaska. Like, you got there in the middle of the winter. Yeah. Hold on. First, you got there in the middle of the winter. Like, how was that? Did you guys just, like, freeze? Or did you just, like, end up just staying there and waiting it out until the spring?
Yeah, no, we ended up staying for about a month, and it was really lucky. A friend of ours actually like ran a lodge up there, so we did have like a cabin to stay in. We didn't have to freeze. And then I actually got to work for a little bit at the Alaska Rock Gym. Some guest setting, and that was super fun. The community up there is just like, it's awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and we did attempt to go bouldering once in the snow in Hatcher Pass, and that was an adventure.
I can imagine it was cold.
It was very cold, but like worth it. I don't know.
I guess. Is it sunshine all year around that time of year?
No, that it's very dark.
Oh.
At that time of year. So
it was night bouldering.
Well, we went just for like a couple hours while it was daylight, but the darkness is really hard. Like, it's kind of just, you have a few hours and then you're like, well, now what do I do? Like, it's just kind of dark. And wow. It's really freaking cold.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I loved it still. It's such a great place. And that gym too, like being able to set for them and like get invested in that community was really special.
Do you want to go back?
Oh, for sure. Oh, I am thinking about going back this summer.
Nice.
We'll see if it happens.
Okay. Yeah. I hope it happens for you. Yeah. Nice. And so now you've done your trip, and fast forward a little bit. Where has your life as a professional climber, as someone who has been basically in this industry, where has this life taken you? Where has your professional climbing taken you? Where's your photography taking you? That's basically gotten you here today at the Indoor Climbing Expo, because, you know, you're basically here to sign autographs, hang out, take some photos, and just continue to be the badass that you are.
Life has been very interesting. Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, I honestly don't know why or how I ended up here. But I guess chronologically, like if I'm after Alaska, I was just back in California for a while. Joshua Tree is a place that I really love.
Mm-hmm.
Climbed there a lot. I would train at the local gyms. And one day at the gym, I met this amazing person named Jake Sanchez, who is a professional climber as well, and he competes in paraclimbing.
Oh, nice.
And so when we met, he actually was like, I need some help trying to figure out how to get to world championships. And he was also looking for a training partner. And I was just like, cool. And so we like kind of connected right away, started training together. Because I had been able to fund a few trips for myself, like I kind of used that knowledge to like help him figure out like how he could finance his trip to world championships.
Okay.
And it ended up that I was able to go with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we were at the paraclimbing world championships in Innsbruck, Austria together.
Okay.
And at the championships, we realized there was no photographer who had been sent from the USA.
Oh.
And at that time, like, I still didn't have, like, a good camera. You can actually look and see pictures. I have this, like, tiny little used camera that was really busted up. But I was like, this is not cool. Like, we need a photographer. It's world championships. Like,
yeah,
come on.
Absolutely. That surprises me.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising.
Actually, it doesn't, now that I say that out loud. It's surprising that there wasn't one, but knowing USA Climbing, knowing how they treat paraclimbers, knowing how they do that, it's not surprising at all.
So to me, I was just like, well, we need to fix this. And so I ended up getting like a media pass and like a little press vest, and I shot photos just at world championships for the paraclimbing. And that ended up being like a community that I've just like really fallen in love with. And since then, like, I've been shooting a bunch of World Cups. I just shot again the World Championship this summer, and somehow over the past few years I started filming a documentary about a paraclimbing athlete who's from New Zealand, Rachel Maia.
Yes, I know.
And just like all very random, and like I don't know.
I've been wanting to get her on the podcast for quite a while.
Yeah, she's were so
you,
cool.
Were you shooting in Texas when the paraclimbing world
No, I haven't been to Texas. We shot in like Salt Lake for two summers, and then in Europe for two summers.
Yeah. Okay. I just didn't know, because I was at the world Well, at the, I guess the U.S. Nationals, I was at Nationals, and I was like thinking in my mind, I was like, I don't remember seeing you there.
No, I think, I feel like I might've been out of town or something. Yeah. I can't remember at the moment, but unfortunately I wasn't able to make that one.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's just been a whole journey of like shooting. And during that time, I'm still climbing and trying to send something hard. But it's a struggle, like the balance between like a career and climbing and like trying to pursue new projects. It is really hard. So
no, it is. It's like, I mean, you kind of run into the same things that coaches do. It's like you're coaching all the time, but you always don't always have the time to coach or train yourself. And sometimes at the end of the day, you just want to rest and you want to be out of the gym or you want to be out of the environment that you're in, even though you love it to death and it means a lot to you. But still, you're kind of like, okay, like I need a little bit of a break with this situation right now.
Yeah, I coached for a couple of years too. And it is hard because you always have to be on.
Agreed. Yeah. Youth and athletes, adults. Did you coach youth or adults? Youth. Okay. Yeah.
And it's amazing, but just like the level of energy that you have to keep for yourself. Then after practice, you're just like, oh my gosh, like I want to go to bed.
No, you have to bring 110% of you to the conversation every single time. I agree. Man.
True.
Wow. I did not know you've had quite an illustrious career in climbing. Like, I didn't know this. Like I said, I followed you for a while, but I'm also one of those people, like, I follow people, but I'm not obsessive compulsive over the people that I follow on Instagram or social media. I'm like, oh, they posted a thing. Let me read about this little thing. Oh, what else have they done? Okay, this is a cool. And then I go on about my merry way and I go on.
That's good. That's healthy, though.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Because I think, you know, doom scrolling now that it's called doom scrolling was a thing before. Yeah. But I think it's just become more and more and more of a thing. So what do you see? What are you working towards now? Like, is your documentary that you're working on, is that close to being done? Or is it already done?
It's not done yet. We finished filming in August. Okay. And life has been pretty crazy since then. So I'm just kind of starting to work on the edit now and really hoping to have it done for like festivals in 2024.
Okay.
Like fingers crossed. But it's a pretty good story. Like it's a combined story of like, you know, Rachel and how amazing she is. And then like our very random friendship that we developed through some very hard times. And then just the journey that we were on for 2 years while she was trying to become the first person from New Zealand to ever win an international climbing medal.
Oh, wow.
So it was very, like, very cool.
Like, first person in general.
In general, yeah.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Man, woman, youth, able, disabled. Like,
okay.
So that was, like, it was a huge goal. And being, like, able to follow her through that was, like, it was a privilege, yeah. And it was great.
Well, I'm excited. I followed her journey, and I didn't know you two intersected a lot. So I'm definitely very excited. Do you have, like, a projected timeline of, like, when you'll start submitting it to festivals, hopefully?
Hopefully in the spring.
Okay.
My whole goal this winter is to really sit down and work on that. We'll see. It's the first film that I've ever shot and ever edited. So
I
who knows what's going to come.
I know the feeling. I'm currently working on my first documentary right now. I'm very blessed to have help with it right now. But I did the same thing in Malawi, Africa.
Yeah.
I was just like, well, no one's going to tell this story but me right now. So let's just go for it and let's hope that it works out to the best.
And that was kind of how ours came about. Like we had like a weird story of how we became friends, and like through our initial conversations and hearing her story, I was just like, I don't think anyone else is going to film this. So like, I guess I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I had no idea what I was doing. I still don't, but you know,
I think that's kind of magic though. Like, I think to a certain extent, like, you technically know what you're doing from a technical standpoint, you know, like filming, you know, enough of that.
Yeah.
But like, I think the reality is you know enough At what point do you know so much that you analysis comes paralysis?
Oh, yeah.
You know? And at what point do you know you don't know enough where you're like, let's just do it anyway and let's just go for it.
Which is basically what it was.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that, honestly, that level of gumption, that level of gall is more important and I think leads to more success in any endeavor, whether it be climbing, filmmaking, your professional life, personal life. I think that level is more important than anything else.
Yeah. And I mean, we definitely had success. We made it through 2 summers. I won't like ruin the ending now.
No. That's why I'm not asking questions about it. I'm deliberately like sidestepping it because I don't want to ruin or spoil the surprise. Yeah, so
but just the fact
you
that
know,
we
you
even,
gotta watch it.
Yeah. Just the fact that we even made it through as like these two women who like we had never met before we got to the first World Cup. Like we had talked online and then we got to the airport and we're just like, oh my gosh, we are traveling together now for months. Like, I hope we get along.
I've definitely had moments like that. I don't think it's ever been that long, but I've definitely been like, hi, I'm Mario. We're stuck together for the next, I mean, that's how the climb was.
Yeah.
Like, hi, I'm Mario. We're together forever, however long we all survive. Yay. Yeah. And it was a beautiful experience.
Yeah,
but
how was it? Like, tell me.
The climb was a lot of shut up and wait because, you know, it's TV, it's filming. There's a lot of things like that.
Yeah.
But it was magical. I think it was the perfect incubator for to breed the best friendships because we didn't have our phones. We had no communication with the outside world.
Oh, wow.
And so all we had was each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put 8 to 10 climbers in a room and all of us vaguely know about each other. It was just joy.
Yeah.
All the time. And it was like, I mean, there was definitely hard moments when someone had to leave, you know, myself included. It was rough. But we bonded so much and we had so much deep, intimate conversations about our lives then, our lives now, predicting what's going to happen, and then even going through a lot of healing and trauma that we had gone through in our past before we got up to that.
Yeah.
You know, I never once, the only time I can ever remember in my life having such close friendships, bonding that like intensely and that fast. And I have people, I want to be very clear, you know who you are. I don't need to say who you are. You are my friends that are that now. But like when I first started rock climbing, when I very first started rock climbing, there was like the crew that I had. And I think that is the closest that I've ever come to recreating that feeling or recreating that crew, that community. And, I've never experienced anything quite like that again. And not at that large of a scale. I want to say that, like, not at with this large of a group of people. Like, there are people in my life, you know, my homie Malik, Tanner, Taylor, you know, there's a bunch of people, you know, Trent, I can think of a bunch of people like that are those people in my life now, but like just meeting a group of people, bonding over communal suffering.
Yeah.
And celebrating someone's sins and also celebrating people's losses, you know, because at the end of the day, it sucked to go home, but it was also really nice knowing that like this chapter is closing, but the book, the story isn't over.
Yeah.
And I think that was like, it was almost like a relief, this reprieve. And so I think that's like the most like simple way that I can sum up like that experience that mattered the most to me. I mean, the climbing in Siriana, Albacete, Mallorca. I mean,
yeah, it looks amazing.
Like it was so gorgeous. Like if I could, I would settle down in Albacete, Spain.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. If I could buy a house, get a partner who is willing to move to Albacete, Spain with me, and we figure it out, and we just live there and stay there, I would do it. I definitely would do it. Nice. I don't think that's feasible.
Maybe someday.
Maybe.
You're putting it out there right now into the universe.
I don't know. It was definitely probably a big moment of healing for me, because also during that time, it was like, you know, the height of going through a divorce too as well. So it was, there was a lot of healing. Like right before that trip, I had finalized my divorce, thrown out my back because I got hurt. Then I got on a plane, went to Spain, and then competed in a competition. So, and then and in a moment of not knowing anything, I met the closest people in my entire life. And so, yeah, it was worth everything.
I think that's kind of one of the most amazing things about climbing and the community in general, is just there's almost, at least that I've found, nowhere else in the world that like you meet people who are just like literally holding your life in their hands.
That
every time we get on a wall. And that creates to me just like such a level of like trust and closeness that like I haven't really found anywhere else. And maybe that is why climbing is so healing and being in the community is so healing, is like, we just, you know, we do have each other's backs in like such a powerful way, like all the time. And I mean, I know there is issues, there's always, you know, like things, but like, I've just made like so many incredible friends. And I know during like all the hardest times in my life, it's other climbers who are there picking me up and like helping me heal. And I guess like it was something I was going to touch on, because it's a big part of the sending and suffering. So after all the like Alaska and all of that, like we all know was COVID.
Yeah.
And COVID was just a terrible time for everyone.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. In particular, like I don't talk about it much, but I actually lost my mom to COVID. Yeah. And it was 2 weeks before vaccines came out.
Oh shit.
So it was just absolutely,
I'm sorry,
absolutely devastating. And I like, I had always, you know, struggled with mental health. And for me, like that time losing, like she had been my one really close family member, like my support system, and losing that was just like earth shattering. And like, I never talk about that, but I just felt like it is such a huge part of like my journey the past few years. And like, that's actually how I ended up meeting Rachel, was I was just struggling so hard and definitely in a space where I was like, I think I'm like a little bit in danger and I don't know what to do. And during that time too, because climbing is such a big part of my livelihood, I couldn't climb. So like my family was in crisis and I ended up having to take like 6 months off before I even could really like get on a rock. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, climbing shouldn't really matter, but because it is such a big part of like how I survive, there was just this like huge pressure to be like, if I don't climb, how can I take care of my family? How can I like provide for them? And I started, I don't know, and it's really weird. Because like financially, it was something I needed to be able to do, at least in my head. I had so much pressure on myself that like it, climbing became very, very poisoned for me after that, where I was just like, I can't do it, but I have to do it. And I like feel all this pressure that like, I'm going to lose out on opportunities and sponsorships and like, what is going to happen to my life? And now I have my family to take care of. And I remember like the first time I really got to go climbing after everything had sort of calmed down, I was like in such a bad state and I had like lost a ton of weight. I was really weak. Everything was awful. And yet I went out and was like, I got to send something hard. Like I have to do it. I have to prove I'm still a climber and like all of this. And I like worked on this route for a few days and just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. And then finally, like I fell again and I just like fully started screaming, like just screaming at like the world and like about everything that had happened and like everything I had lost. And I remember like the last two things I said were actually like, I hate rock climbing and I hate that I don't have my mom. And then my partner just lowered me and I was like crying and crying. And then I don't know, like an hour later, I remember it was just like this wind whipped around the corner and I just like stood up and I was like, all right, let's go. And then I ended up sending it and I was like, yes. But I posted about that experience like on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about like that pressure I had been feeling of like, I have to be sending all the time, like even though stuff is hard. And the response from the community is actually like, was so amazing. Everyone wrote back and they were like, honestly, like no one cares what you're sending. Like everyone just wants you to be okay. Like we're a community and we have each other's backs and like we're here for you. And I think that hearing that from everyone else, that allowed me to like take all the pressure off myself too. And from then, and it's been a couple years now, like my relationship to climbing has just like started to flourish again, where I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having so much fun with it. And like, I got into like, that's how I met Rachel, was like through that post and her reaching out. And so then I've gotten into like filming this documentary and like, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. The whole like journey.
You know, it's okay to be pissed. It's okay to be mad. It's okay to rage. It's okay to be infuriated. It's okay to want to burn the world down and watch the ashes fly. Like, and I think the reality is like, it's a hard balance to do that in climbing with something that you love so much, but that you love climbing so much and it helps you release your emotions and it helps you do this. And I want to be very clear before I finish this thought, like I have not experienced a loss like that. And I understand that like our parents are our parents. Me and my brother just had this conversation a little while ago. Like our parents are getting really old and like, we just like, we're preparing for this and like, we're trying to think about it. So this is not something I've personally experienced myself. So I want to be very clear about that. And I want to make space for that. And I want to give a caveat of that. And so if anybody doesn't like what I say, like, you're more than welcome to rebuke against me, all means. But it is, I've noticed this, it's really fine line with using something that we love, that brings us joy, that allows us to feel triumph, that allows us to feel victory, also allows us to feel defeat, also allows us to feel anger, confusion, even resentment towards a climb. It's quite magical how that same tool can allow us to grieve, can allow us to redirect our rage from a situation that we have absolutely no control over. And we feel like the world has been ripped away from us. And we feel like the world of whatever form of sense of normality that we have is gone. And then you can rage within this sport. And you can rage within this discipline. And all of a sudden, you can come right back to it later on. And you can, and all of a sudden, you can come back to it later on and still kind of redo that relationship. Or, yeah, like, not redo, but you still have that healthy relationship with it. And I think, I'm not saying climbing is this magic bullet. I don't want to say that at all. That has nothing to do with it. But what is magic is you. What is magic is you, your resilience, your ability to allow yourself to feel your feelings, because your feelings are there for a reason, and allow yourself to navigate them. And it's just, you know, it's just really cool that you had climbing as an avenue, as a tool to help navigate through that. And I don't know, it's just something that's become very apparent. I've just known quite a few people over the last 3-4 years that have suffered, as I like to say, level one losses like that. You know, I lost my uncle during COVID, and another distant family member that I didn't know as very well, but my uncle Thomas, knew him very well, grew up all the time, family reunion, saw him. And it's actually kind of sad because he was the only member of my family who was really doing our family tree, researching all of our family tree, reaching, searching all our family knowledge. and he didn't have a chance to get some of it on paper.
Yeah.
And so like we have long distance relatives that we don't know who they are because he got sick during COVID and that information died with him.
Yeah.
And so he was really trying to redo our lineage all the way back up to sharecropping. Like wow. He was trying to figure out like who are actual relatives after sharecropping, which is not that far ago from the time stand. And so like, I don't understand your loss, but what I do want to say is like, I'm sorry that that happened, but I'm also very happy that you had a way that allowed you to release it.
Yeah. And it's interesting how it worked too, because I feel like there was the loss of my mom, and with it, like, I did lose climbing. And for me, that was a huge loss of, like, identity.
Okay, everyone, it's 5 o'clock.
At the Indoor Climbing Expo, they played Ice Ice Baby at the beginning and the end. Indoor Climbing Expo, ice, it makes sense. But what also makes sense is picking up a new Sends and Suffers t-shirt. If you are looking at this podcast on your pocket supercomputer, you'll notice me in a new hat and this beautiful image by a local artist named Hank. Shirts are $30, $5 for shipping and handling. Message me on social media or send an email to sendsandsuffers@gmail.com. And I'll get one right out to you. I hope you're enjoying this episode. We're not over. Here we go. We got heavy.
I know.
We got heavy. I feel like the Ice Ice Baby definitely broke up the monotony of it all. Like, I'm definitely going to have to cut that out because that's in like two of the podcasts.
Oh, no.
I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
It's okay. Yeah, I feel like, okay, I'm trying to remember. I was talking about like identity and grief. And so I know like in losing my mom, like, there was this huge loss of identity as like, I'm her daughter. And now like, I don't have that person to talk to. And I feel it's almost like she's like the cruise ship and I'm the lifeboat and I've been untethered. And that was a loss. And then being not able to climb, there was that identity loss of like, am I even still a climber? Like, I can't do this anymore. And those two things like really seemed to go hand in hand. And I didn't know how to process that. Like any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying like so hard to just like hold everything together and like be strong and not feel. And then like the first time I go climbing, it's like all of it came out. Just like all that rage you were talking about and like the anger and like just everything, like it came out. And I feel like climbing, even though I was hating it at the time, it still gave me that ability to like feel and process and like come to terms with like how big of a loss everything was. And I do appreciate the sport for that and for its ability to like let us heal and to like be introspective and understand ourselves.
Do you think it's the sport's ability to let us heal? Or do you think it's our ability to heal? The fact of the matter, like, the Rock doesn't care who you are. Like, the Rock just spits you off. It bounces you back. Like, these holds, none of this stuff cares.
Right.
But do you think it's our ability to actually problem solve and work through this situation? Because we, like, we're just problem solving, working through a boulder problem, is trying to spend as much time as possible with it.
Yeah.
The same thing really applies. Like, or is it our ability? Is it helping us unlock our own personal abilities and our own possible, our own abilities of healing, of growth? Because at the end of the day, like, I agree with you. Like, I definitely think rock climbing is this, like, I think rock climbing is one of the few sports that are so multifaceted that it can connect almost any aspect of life. But it is still life that is connecting to, because if it wasn't for that, rock climbing itself would just be this worthless thing. Like, it's, because theoretically rock climbing is stupid. Like, if we're gonna be honest about it,
you're just
it's,
like,
it's dumb
climbing a rock the hardest way possible. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah I mean, it's definitely dumb, but I guess that's the question.
It is a good question. I do think it is, like, we do have the ability to heal, but maybe it's something that climbing brings out in us. Like, it is this like physical manifestation of like, you are frustrated. Like, here's a problem. Like, how are you going to face it?
Yeah.
And so maybe it's just that having that in your face in a, I don't know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
This is very like hypothetical.
Yeah, no, it's like, very existential. Yeah. Like if you think about it, like it really is. It's like it's this is this existential cerebral thing that we're like we're talking about. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, is it the sport? Is it the person? You know, is it
something I felt was just that like everything that's inside of you or that you're experiencing, like you're taking that with you up a wall or into a climb because it's you.
Agreed.
And so then maybe that's what it is. Like, it's now your mirror of showing you like what you are carrying. Mm-hmm. And I know during that time, like my fear was like skyrocketing. I was so afraid of getting hurt because then what would happen to my family or, you know, and I was so afraid of like not being successful because then I would lose my livelihood and my ability to take care of my family. And so I think climbing with that, like it was just so reflective and it made me see maybe things that I wasn't processing.
We're going to have to wrap this up because everybody else wants to get out of here. And like, we're just going to have to do this now, but I would love to continue this conversation. And I feel like we're due for another one of these, but real quick so we can wrap up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you want to say hi to anybody and where can people find you and support you and connect with you?
I don't know. Hi, everybody. Like, hi, thanks for watching and listening. Okay. And I really appreciate it.
Okay. And then what are your social media handles? Do you have a website? Do you have anything like that?
I just have Instagram, really. It's katiejo.myers. So katiejo.myers.
Okay.
And that's all. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for being on my show. Oh, I appreciate you. This has been a heartfelt conversation and I think you're the best. High five.
Aw, thank you so much. That was really great.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was beautiful. It was moving. It was deep. It was intellectual, just like every one of you. If you haven't already picked up a shirt, get yourself some of this new drip. $30 for the shirt, $5 for shipping and handling. Just shoot me a message on social media. Email me at sendsandsuffers@gmail.com. I'll get one right out to you right away. As always, stay beautiful. And remember, if you're not suffering, I mean, you got to ask yourself, was the send even worth it at all? Struck to